What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. I'm recording this on Monday, January 6th. We have had some pretty big news over the past week or so with the Jimmy Butler situation escalating quite a bit. No longer just rumors that he wants to be traded, but a full-on trade request. The Heat saying that they will comply, giving him a suspension, all of that. So we'll talk through kind of how we got here, as well as some of the suitors' potential trades. What would they look like? What's his value? Who knows? And then I'm going to talk about the other news that came out last night, which was the Phoenix Suns and Bradley Beal and Yusuf Nurkic getting relegated to the bench in favor of a rookie in Ryan Dunn and Mason Plumlee. Talk about what that means for Phoenix, where they go from here, their poor play. Do they blow it up? All things Suns, but it's not looking good for them across the board. With that said, let's go ahead and get right into it. Okay, so we're going to start off with the Jimmy Butler news that is circling the NBA world. Last time I hopped on the podcast, I talked about the Jimmy Butler rumors that were out there. Shams Charania had put out some just tidbits saying that he might prefer a trade, and it was really nothing but rumors at that point, but it is much more than that now. And so we've gotten into a dark place for the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler and their relationship. Jimmy Butler has formally requested a trade. And after the Heat said they would not trade him, they now are saying that they are open for business. So I first just want to start off with, how did we get here? We know that Jimmy Butler has always been a very big personality, and Pat Riley is also, I won't say a big personality, but a dude with a big ego, that's for sure. And the big personality on the part of Jimmy is totally fine when you're winning, when you're in the NBA finals like they were in 2020 and 2023, or even one game away from it in 2022, you can tolerate some of his headaches off the court and some of his antics and whatnot. But the problem is Jimmy Butler has not had this team winning over the past couple of years, and he has been largely unreliable overall. He's been very injury prone as well. Since getting to Miami, he has not played 65 or more games in a single season one single time. And as a result, Miami has been pretty mediocre as a regular season team throughout his tenure in Miami. And that even includes the years that they made the NBA Finals. In 2020, his first season there, they managed only 44 wins, which to their credit was a shortened season. So it would have been more like 49 win pace had they played 82 games. But then 2021, they followed that up with a 40 win season, which again would be 46 win pace. That was also a shortened season. Then 2022, they did have a very nice regular season, winning 53 games. But then they regressed a bunch in 2023 down to 44 wins, only 46 wins last season. And this year at 17-16, they are only playing at 42 win pace. So that is about an average of 45 wins per year. And even if you extrapolate the shortened seasons, that's only 47 wins per year in Jimmy's tenure here. And look, that's not awful. But for a team that's made two finals appearances in the last five seasons, you would think that they'd be able to have a little bit more regular season success. And just to put in perspective how difficult it is to win a championship when you don't take the regular season super seriously, is there's only three teams in NBA history that have won a title with 47 or less wins, which is the average pace that they've had since Butler got there, and a number that they've only passed once in his tenure. Those three teams were the 95 Rockets, and that was a team that had their second and third leading scorer play only combined 71 games that season. So injury probably played a role in their lack of wins that year. And then the other two teams were pre-NBA merger teams that don't even exist anymore, the Washington Bullets and the St. Louis Hawks in 78 and 58 respectively. And so the point is, Butler has been known to just not take the regular season very seriously. He takes plays off. He takes games off. He takes halves off. I mean, he misses games. He hasn't been available with nagging injuries here and there. And then when he does play, he looks like a shell of what he does in the postseason that we've seen over his tenure with Miami. And so it's just, I get it. If you're a championship team like Boston and you come into the year with a little sluggish at times through the grind of a regular season, but they haven't won anything with Butler. They have not yet won anything with him. And so it's really hard to play this I'm too cool for the regular season thing when you're winning 45 games a year and every other year you're getting bounced in the first round, which is basically what's happened for Miami, especially over the last couple of years. And so this whole tension, I'm sure there had been some frustration in Miami's front office just due to his lack of reliability, but really came to the forefront last postseason when Jimmy Butler missed the entire first round series against the Celtics. They end up losing in five games. And he afterwards, instead of just cutting his losses, saying, you know, it is what it is. They were probably the better team anyway. He said, quote, Boston would be at home if he had played. And Pat Riley did not like that. He, when asked about those comments, said that if you're not on the court playing, then you need to keep your mouth shut. And so that was really the first time we'd seen some public tension between the two. Who knows if it had been boiling up beforehand. And Butler made it very known that he wanted an extension and the Heat refused to give him one in the offseason. And they have maintained that position throughout this regular season as well, saying that they will not extend him for the, at least not for the number he's looking for, or the years that he's looking for. And so, as I said, Shams then reported a few weeks back that Jimmy might actually prefer to be traded, to which his agent got very angry and denied and came at Shams and said that it was incorrect, which obviously just some PR play right there by the agent. And then the Heat said that they were not going to trade him. They said they don't intend to trade him and that they won't trade him because they don't want it to hang over the team. But then recently this week, Jimmy Butler, in a post-game interview in which he put up, I believe it was 9 points in back-to-back games, in which he didn't look like he had a lot of energy, wasn't maybe playing as hard as we're accustomed to him playing. And he said, what do I want to see happen? I want to see me get my joy back from playing basketball. Wherever that may be, we'll find out here pretty soon. Just reiterating, he wants to get his joy back. He said, I'm happy here off the court, but I want to be back to somewhere dominant. I want to hoop, and I just want this team to win. And right now, I'm not doing that, is what he said. Then he was asked if he can find his joy in Miami, and he said, quote, probably not. And that was the end of the press conference. The team then subsequently suspends him for 9 games for what they called conduct detrimental to the team, and say that they're open for business on Jimmy Butler trades. And so this thing spiraled quickly. I think the Heat were trying to downplay it, and so Butler took it into his own hands. And so the question here is, who's at fault for this? And I think it's both of them to an extent. I actually lean more on the side of the Heat front office, because I think they've been complacent in upgrading this roster. Jimmy Butler has every right to be disappointed with the lack of support he's gotten, given the fact that he's 35 years old at this point. He doesn't have a lot of years at all-star level play probably left in his career. And he's been forced into this Bam, Hero, and role player core. And they have really not given him anything or anyone else to support him. Bam is a nice player, an all-star caliber player, but that's mostly for what he does in the defensive end. He is not really a reliable number two option. And Tyler Hero is having a great year this year, certainly taking a leap from where he's been in the past, but he had been nothing more than a spark plug scorer off the bench in previous years. And he doesn't play much defense, and he's also been very injury prone. When they made the finals in 2023, he did not play a single game that year. He also got hurt in the year that they made the conference finals as well, and missed the majority of that postseason in 2022. So he has not been reliable. And then they're just shuffling in these undrafted guys left and right. And then as soon as they start to perform, they let him walk. Max Strus, Gabe Vincent. And maybe that was a good decision to let him walk, because those guys haven't been overly impactful on their new teams. But regardless, they're just shuffling guys in and out. And they draft well. I'll give them that. Jaime Jaquez was a good pick where they got him. I like Khalil Ware, their first round pick this past season. So it's not to say that they haven't done a good job of acquiring talent with the picks and the money that they have used. But the point is, the only addition they really made in his tenure is Kyle Lowry, who was like 35 at the time. The dude's 37, 38, 39 now. Like, they couldn't have expected that to be the impact signing that they really needed. And then they trade him and a pick for Terry Rozier, who's been very subpar so far for the Miami Heat. And so I just feel like Pat Riley's got a little bit too much pride. He's more old school. He's bought into the Heat culture, which to an extent is fair. But the Miami Heat of the past were adding LeBron James. They were adding Chris Bosh to Dwayne Wade. They were going out and getting a Jimmy Butler. But they haven't really been aggressive in that front. I mean, they made a run at KD. They made at least brief run at Bradley Beal. They made a run at Dame. But they struck out on all those guys. And so I just think that Butler would have a little bit of a fair case to say, look, maybe he hasn't played as many games as they would have liked, but do we really think that this team would have won a championship if he had? I don't personally. I think that they've maxed out in the playoffs, and Jimmy's played about as well as you ever could have hoped out of him with the group that he has. And so I just feel like the front office, they were always going to be in murky waters when they didn't extend him. It's not like Butler is outwardly not open about these things. And so he obviously has some fault as well. He's had an ugly departure at every single stop he's been out. Fred Hoiberg in Chicago, there's those famous reports of him openly calling him soft in front of the entire team, just undermining him as a coach before what was a little bit of an ugly divorce in Chicago because they didn't want to give him an extension either. Then he goes to Minnesota for a very brief stint, which they have a pretty good first year, but into that second season, Butler was known to be upset with the lack of effort and professionalism out of the younger guys, namely Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, just to name a few. And then there was the infamous practice in which he played against all the starters with the bench players and just beat them handily and was talking shit the entire time. And then even in Philadelphia, there were reports that he clashed with Brett Brown a little bit, that he didn't like Ben Simmons and playing with him and sort of his work ethic and effort all the time also. And so everywhere he's gone, it's been an ugly breakup, and this is once again happening. And so, like I said, Jimmy Butler, when you get into the Jimmy Butler business, there are going to be some things you're going to have to deal with. He's a spectacular player, or at least he has been in his time with Miami and really throughout his entire career. And any team that wants to trade for him, they're going to have to weigh the pros and cons and balance. Is taking on his personality and maybe having to pay him worth it? And so that's why his trade market is really interesting, because if he get traded for 3 first round picks, I wouldn't even really think it was shocking. I'd be like, look, this dude's been a top 20 player for close to a decade now, a top 10 player at times. He's taken 2 teams to the finals, 2 undermanned, not super talented teams to the finals. And so, like, I get what a team would see in him for doing that. But if he gets traded for no picks and like salary fillers and then one small, like, nice young player, that also won't really shock me. It's kind of a weird situation because I get it with the age, the injury history, the lack of effort in the regular season at times, the just overall personality and difficulty that we've seen with him and a lot of other people. This is the 4th team now this has happened. At some point, you got to look at the player. We do this with James Harden and say he is difficult and that he is someone you don't want on your team. But for some reason, we treat Jimmy a little differently. And I think it's because the postseason performance is stronger. But Harden was a better player in his prime. So regardless, I don't know what he's going to go for. And so I'm going to talk through some potential trades that either have been rumored or I think make sense. I don't know which of these will happen. I'm sure I'll touch on most of the teams that are at least a possibility. But again, it's going to be very difficult to project like how many picks he goes for, or if a young player goes in there, or if it's really just expiring salaries, or do they want to get like a comparable player back in return? So it just gets interesting. That normally with these situations, the trade value is pretty obvious, but for this one, for whatever reason, it strikes me as one of the more difficult ones to gauge. So first, I'll just eliminate teams that I don't see it. I think there's a group of teams that's too bad or they're just not in a place to add a guy like Jimmy Butler. I don't think he would necessarily re-sign there. I don't think that adding him even gets them close to contending. And so at his age and his salary number, it just doesn't really make sense. So Wizards, Hornets, Raptors, Nets, Bulls, Pistons, Blazers, Pelicans, Jazz, that group, I just don't see it. And maybe the Pelicans, there's been rumors about like Brandon Ingram. Maybe they get in as a third team. But again, it's like they're not going to make the playoffs this season. They are very far. Just they're in too big of a hole because all their injuries. I mean, I think they're like 5-30 or something at this point in the season. And so it doesn't make much sense for a guy that could opt out and potentially not re-sign to trade for him. So I don't see the Pelicans as a real player in this. But then we've got the group of teams that I'm ruling out just because either it doesn't make sense for them salary wise for what they'd have to give up. They'd either have to give up pieces that are too important and integral to what they're doing. And so I just don't think that they'd want to do that, or it just literally doesn't work math wise. Like you can't really get a trade to work. So the Pacers, Knicks, Celtics, Bucks, Wolves, Mavs, Clippers, and Magic. I know the Mavs have been rumored, but again, they would have to probably trade Daniel Gafford and Klay Thompson to make it work. I just think that they like their center rotation too much. I'd be shocked if they were willing to move Gafford. And I think they like what they've gotten out of Klay so far. So I just don't see that as realistic. There's really no other salaries that work just given how their cap sheet is worked out right now. Pacers, I kind of like that addition for them. But again, they'd have to basically gut their entire bench or trade Miles Turner, which then they'd be starting Thomas Bryant because Isaiah Jackson and James Wiseman are out for the year. So I don't see that as viable. Celtics, obviously, they're not messing with anything. The Knicks, they'd have to trade one of their big four players to make it happen salary-wise. Again, I don't think they want to do that. I think they like what they've got. The Bucks were rumored today about potentially being in the mix, which at first I was like, okay, I could see that. But then I was reminded they're a second apron team. They cannot aggregate salaries, so they would have to trade Dame or Giannis to make it happen. That's the only way. They can't do Middleton plus Bobby Portis plus Connaughton to make it work because they can't aggregate the salaries. So unless they do something crazy creative where they like trade a pick plus a salary to a team that can just eat that and get below the apron to make it happen, but I'd be shocked. That's just too many hoops to jump through, so I don't see it with Milwaukee. And then a team like the Wolves, kind of same thing. Like in theory, it could make sense, but they are also a second apron team. So it's just not going to work with this group just for what those reasons that I laid out there. So now I'll talk about sort of the three teams that are most linked to Butler and a trade with Miami to this point, and that's Phoenix, Golden State, and Houston. I know I kind of already talked about these teams on my last pod as possibilities, but I'll get into more about what it might take to get them. So for the Suns, it would be pretty straightforward if Miami was interested in Bradley Beal. They are a second apron team, which means it's either got to be Durant, Booker, or Beal that goes out in any deal, and it's not going to be Booker or Durant. So it has to be Beal. And there are reports saying that he's open to that no trade clause. I know that's been a big hurdle, but it sounds like he's willing to waive it, and part of the reason might be something we'll get into later with their lineup decisions recently. But regardless, Miami was on not only on his list when he was being traded before, but they were number one. And the reason he didn't go there is because they didn't want him, it seemed like. So he certainly would be open to playing for Miami. So even though both these teams are in the apron, there's an interesting rule where if you attach a minimum salary, then it doesn't count towards the total salary coming back to the other team. So even though Butler and Beal don't make the exact same amount, if you throw in Josh Richardson with Butler, that deal technically works. You could just ship out Butler and Josh Richardson for Bradley Beal, which is a legal trade. But obviously, I think that Phoenix probably will need to attach some other assets. Because they are second apron, they cannot attach other players as assets. So it has to be picks. And I know they don't have a lot of picks. They do have their 2031 first round pick, which is probably one of the more valuable picks in the league right now, just given Phoenix's situation. So if they make that unprotected, maybe that's enough to entice Miami to take on Beal. They also have 3 second round picks. They might just demand that they just give them all the picks they have, which at face value, that's not a terrible trade for Phoenix. But man, if you don't even have a single second round pick in the next 7 years, you're kind of playing with fire, a little dangerous to just completely. I mean, we talk about they're all in. They would be literally all in with actually no moves to be made. I know people throw that around a lot now, but obviously they do have picks that they can trade and some flexibility, but that would pretty much take it all away. But if Miami ultimately decides they do not want Bradley Beal, this still could work in some sort of three-team scenario. I've seen the Pistons thrown around as a team that could potentially work salary-wise with Beal going to Detroit, Butler to the Suns, and then some combination of salaries with Tobias Harris and Tim Hardaway Jr. going to the Heat. Of course, that works as it is. I'm sure they would want some other maybe younger players, maybe a Marcus Sasser, Wendell Moore, a Bobby Klintman. Like, these dudes aren't really getting minutes for Detroit anyway, so I doubt that they'd care too much to part with them. But again, then who gets the pick? Like, that pick has to be in the deal, the Suns pick. But does it go to Miami or does it go to Detroit? Because why is Detroit really doing that if they're not also getting some sort of asset back? And then why is Miami doing that for Tobias Harris and Tim Hardaway Jr.? So it gets a little difficult with Phoenix. Again, I think really the only way that it'll work for the Suns is if everybody else is really lowballing, or Jimmy basically says, I'm not going to re-sign anywhere except for Phoenix, which is possible. We've seen it happen. But otherwise, it just gets really difficult. I don't know if Phoenix wants to get rid of every single pick they have. And unless they do that, then I just don't think anyone wants that Beal contract. So I don't know. I don't think the Suns are a front runner for this. I don't really think that it'll happen with them. I just think it's a little bit too difficult, even if they are the most highly motivated team, which it sounds like they might be, but I don't see it. Then Golden State. The package for them would probably have to be Andrew Wiggins, Dennis Schroeder, who, by the way, cannot be traded until February 13th. They have to wait 2 months until they acquire, since they acquired him, to be able to deal him, which that's, I mean, over a month from now. So if it's going to be Golden State, then they would have to drag this out a little bit, which is certainly possible. But I don't know how long Miami wants Butler playing once he fulfills his 7-game suspension. Is he just going to go back to playing? Is he going to be a distraction? Like, I can't imagine it's going to be a good situation with him playing games for them anymore. And so Wiggins, Schroeder, let's just say they do wait to this long, then they basically would take their pick between a Buddy Hield, Kyle Anderson, Looney, Gary Payton, and then maybe Kuminga. But Kuminga's injured right now. Buddy Hield, I think, is a 3 or 4 year deal. Kyle Anderson's on a 3 year deal. I don't know if Miami is going to want, it sounds like they don't want longer contracts. So I don't know if they'd want Hield. I don't know if they want Kyle Anderson. They might just want Kuminga, but it sounded like the Warriors don't really want to trade Wiggins and Kuminga for Butler. That was reported recently that they are maybe a lesser likely destination right now because they don't seem like they really want to part with those guys. They might also need to add a couple salary fillers depending on which players are in the deal for this. They also have two tradable firsts, 2026 and 2028, as well as 5 second-round picks, and they could do up to 4 swaps alongside those firsts. So maybe the picks are enough. Again, I'm going back to, like, I don't know what Miami wants. I don't know if they want picks. It sounded like maybe they want a good player back too. So, like, Kuminga would maybe fit their timeline, but I still am skeptical if the Warriors want to part with him, because I think that they've got some leverage here, because these offers might just be lower than what Miami hopes. So maybe they'd give a first round pick, Wiggins, Looney, Payton, and then a filler. But is that enough for Miami? I don't know. Maybe they throw in some second round picks. We'll see. Then Houston, that deal would have to basically be Dylan Brooks, Steven Adams, and either Jeff Green or Jock Landale at a minimum. They have a lot of picks. They owe their 2026 pick out, but they have the rest of their picks as well as 3 Phoenix picks and some Brooklyn swaps. So picks are not an issue for them. But I think Miami's probably going to want one of Jalen Green, Amen Thompson, Reed Shepard, Tari Eason, or Cam Whitmore. And maybe Houston's willing to part with Whitmore, who's out of the rotation anyway. Shepard just got sent down to the G League. I still think they probably like him and view him as a longer term piece, but so I'd be shocked if they traded him just because he was a top 3 pick this past year. But Eason and Thompson have been huge to what they want to do this year. And maybe Jalen Green, they're cool with moving on from. But then trading Green and Brooks, that's 2 year starting wings that you have. And so then it's, I guess you could throw Eason or Amen Thompson in there, but you're losing some depth regardless. But it sounds like Houston just doesn't want to shake this thing up. They are probably the most capable team to pull this off. Like, if they want a deal to happen, they can easily make it happen. I think if you could probably sub in Jalen Green instead of Brooks or Adams and maybe throw in a first, and then I'm sure Miami would be interested in that. But Jalen Green and Tyler Hero, kind of redundant players a little bit. So if I'm Miami, I might even prefer getting like a Eason, Whitmore, those salaries, and then a pick or two. But I don't know if Houston wants to go that far. I don't think they're motivated to make this happen considering how young their roster is. Everybody is 23 or younger basically in their core outside of Brooks and Van Vliet. And those guys probably aren't long-term pieces for them anyway. So I don't know. I'm still have continued to be skeptical about Houston and if they're really in this, but I kind of feel like this is going to happen and it's not going to be Golden State, Phoenix, or Houston. It's going to be some team that no one was really talking about, a more of a wild card team that could jump in the mix. And so I've got a couple teams here that I think could be those teams. The first one is probably maybe my favorite destination for Butler in terms of just fit and what it could look like once he gets there and just having the assets to actually make it happen too. And so that is the Memphis Grizzlies. And this could work with Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard, and Brandon Clark. They also have all of their picks. They also have a lot of really cheap, somewhat promising young players. I'm sure that Miami will ask for at least one or two of Jalen Wells, GG Jackson, Scottie Pippen Jr., Vince Williams Jr., even a Jay Huff or Cam Spencer or something like that. And will the Grizzlies be willing to trade those guys? I don't know. They've been kind of stingy in general as a team with just hoarding assets and not really wanting to make a go all in move, which they kind of tried with Smart. That hasn't really paid off a ton, which they didn't give up any huge rotation pieces other than Tyus Jones for that, but they did give up some picks. So Kennard has been injured a bit this year and now the rotation. Smart has been super banged up. Brandon Clark's been pretty important to what they want to do. Like, just because when Edie's out, he's kind of the starting center and they don't really have anybody else. Aldama would basically be the backup after Edie if they did trade Clark. But maybe Miami is willing to send back like a Kevin Love as well in the deal to maybe just ease the depth in the center position for them. But this makes a lot of sense to me. I just think Jimmy Butler would bring everything that Memphis needs. The one reason I'm hesitant on them is just because, well, aside from health, they just have not been healthy at all over the past few seasons. But I still just, it doesn't shock me anytime they do well in the regular season, but I just am worried about their star power and scoring in the half court and nut crunch time. Who's going to go get a bucket for this team? And I know that Ja Morant is awesome and he's been an all NBA level player throughout his career when he has played, and he's been really good this year as well. But Bane is having a really down year this year. Jaren Jackson is just an inconsistent scorer and shooter in general. And so those guys are not super reliable overall. And I just think that they are going to be not on par with a lot of the other actual top level contenders like Dallas or Oklahoma City, or even in a series like Denver, where sure, is Jamal Murray and Desmond Bane maybe somewhat comparable in some argument, maybe, but Jokic is so much better than Ja that they can overcome the lack of super strong second option because of how good the first option is. Whereas Ja is not that guy yet to me. And he is a guy, I think he can be their first option on a contending team potentially, but they need more around him. And so I think Butler would solve so many of those issues. He fits right into what they want to do with their just grit and grind old vibes that they've kind of brought back a little bit with some of these teams. He plays hard defensively. He is just a leader in the locker room that they need, which they've thought they were getting in Smart, but he just hasn't played enough. And Jimmy Butler can do all the things Smart can do in that capacity, except he's a much better player also. And he also just gives them another option in the half court. I know he's not a great shooter, but what he would bring is so much more of what they need in terms of going and getting a bucket when they need it. So I love the fit for Memphis. I think it's low risk. They're still going to have a lot of picks. They're still going to have a lot of young players. They're going to give up depth, but they are deep as hell as is. So I don't think it would be a huge loss for them necessary with anything that they would give up. And so I really like Memphis. I did see today that they are in talks for Butler, at least in discussions. So, I think now's the time for them because I know they've been a young team, but they're not super, super young anymore. You know, all their guys are in the 24, 25 range. So they're approaching what should be their prime years. They're all on their second contract among their top three guys. So it's not like there's some cheap roster either. So if I were Memphis, I would go for it. And I think this makes sense on the Miami side as well, just given the picks and the depth and the younger pieces that they could get back. And then the other team that I don't think they should do this, but it wouldn't shock me if they got into this discussion, just feels like a very them thing to do, which is the Kings. They are not playing well this year. They are outside of the play-in right now, the 11 seed. They're below 500. They've been pretty much out of the playoff picture the whole entire season. It just hasn't been a good year for them. They fired Mike Brown already. They've been a mess defensively. DeMar DeRozan fit has looked okay at times, been a little clunky at other times. And there's some tension with De'Aaron Fox. Potentially he would be on the move soon. So they're in at kind of an inflection point. Do they trade Fox and go for more of a retool rebuild situation around Sabonis? Or do they just double down on what they got, add a guy like Jimmy Butler, maybe try to see what they have in that group and then reevaluate if they want to re-sign those guys afterwards? But this deal would have to be DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Huerter, and then really any of the salary fillers that they have on this team, lower level salaries, and that would work money-wise. They also have three tradable first-round picks, up to three swaps alongside those, and then four second-rounders. So they've got the assets to pull it off, assuming Miami's okay with taking back DeMar DeRozan. I know they don't necessarily want longer-term deals, but he's much cheaper than Butler. He makes less than half of what Butler's making right now. So in theory, he's a cheaper replacement for Butler, does some of the same things as a scorer in the half court and operating in the mid range. But I don't know if they'd want him, but I know that they want to remain competitive and they don't want to go through a full rebuild. So he's a nice player to kind of prevent you from doing that. I think him, Bam, and Harrow is still a competent team. I mean, they'll make the play-in still. They at least could make the playoffs. And then they might add some assets alongside that with some picks potentially. But I'm going to be surprised if the Heat are asking for Keon Ellis or Devin Carter, which maybe they'd be willing to part with, or Keegan Murray, who I doubt they would want add to this deal. And then I also bet that Pat Riley probably is going to be like, how about De'Aaron Fox? Which I don't see that happening, because if you're the Kings and you're trading Fox, why are you doing it for a 35-year-old Jimmy Butler on an expiring deal? I think if they trade Fox, they're going to want the whole classic picks and prospects type package, not a Jimmy Butler type. More of a lateral move if they did that. Plus, that would require them to not trade DeMar, and I think the DeMar-Butler fit is not a very good one. But regardless, I think this something could work here. I would not advise the Kings to do this, because I think that it's not going to be, I just don't think it moves the needle for them. I still think they're probably at best sneaking into the play-in as a 7 or 8 seed, and then probably getting bounced by a team like Oklahoma City in the first round. So, but I get it. They were so bad for so long. It's hard to fault them just because like they want to remain competitive. And the second you trade Fox, you're already like hinting at another rebuild, and the fans had just been through that for so long. So I get them wanting to remain as good as possible for as long as possible after their drought. But I don't know. I wouldn't do it for them. Then there's a list of other teams that I think are less likely but could be possible. I think the Sixers probably, I know they really like Jimmy and him and Embiid are close. I don't see how this happens. It would have to be for Paul George. They've got lots of picks to attach, but if the Heat don't want Bradley Beal, I don't know why they would want Paul George, because his contract is even longer and he's even older. And so if they want Paul George, you might as well just re-sign Jimmy Butler is the point. So I don't really see that happening unless it was a three-teamer where Paul George goes out to somebody like the Warriors or the Nuggets, who he's rumored to be a possible trade candidate with before. But again, why don't those teams just trade for Jimmy Butler then, who is not locked up at a max contract for 4 years? So I don't know. I don't see that super realistic, but I'm sure the Sixers will entertain it or at least try. Lakers as well, I don't really see it, because they'd either have to trade Reeves or trade like five guys. It'd have to be like Hachimura, Gabe Vincent, Max Christie, Hood Schifino, and Vanderbilt. Just a lot of players. They probably would be totally gutted depth wise. They do have some picks to trade as well, but I just don't see it. After they got Dorian Finney-Smith, I think they're going to go more around the margins to improve this team. which I think is a fine strategy. They've looked pretty good recently, top four seed in the West right now, actually. But again, I'm sure they'll kick the tires on it. Don't know if it'll necessarily be anything really considered. But a couple more fun teams, the Spurs, Keldon Johnson, Harrison Barnes, and Trey Jones, plus probably some picks gets that done, maybe, depending on how many picks. Or if they want a player, you could throw Vassell in there. I'm sure they're going to want Castle. I would not trade Castle if I were them. But they could make it happen. And of course, they'd have some old ass dudes next to Wemby with Chris Paul and Jimmy Butler. But they'd be fun to watch, man. I mean, he would be everything you could want next to Wemby and Chris Paul. Just another scorer, another guy that can go get a basket, another good passer and connective piece offensively, another good wing defender. Like, the Spurs, they're in the thick of it in the play-in. And so if they want to expedite something a little bit, I could see it. But I don't know if they want to lock up a long-term deal with Jimmy, just given where they are timeline-wise. So I think it's less realistic. But another fun team, probably not likely, the Hawks. They could trade DeAndre Hunter, Bogdan Bogdanovic, and then really any of their salary fillers. And then they've got five tradable firsts, multiple swaps, 6 seconds. I'm sure the Heat will ask for Risa Shea, Okongwu, Kobe Bufkin, maybe even Dyson Daniels. They probably would ask for Jalen Johnson, but that's a total non-starter for Atlanta, obviously. But I kind of like that fit. I don't know. They wouldn't have a ton of shooting necessarily, losing Bogdanovic and Hunter, with Dyson Daniels, who's already not a super great shooter. And then Jalen Johnson's a little bit inconsistent. Capella is not really a floor spacer. Neither is Okongwu to this point. So they wouldn't have a ton of shooting, but I think they'd be much improved defensively, and it would give them a lot more options offensively in terms of scoring, rather than having to have Trey do basically everything for this team. But again, I doubt that happens, but I think it would be fun. Then the Cavs, I'd be shocked if they shook anything up too big, just with how good they've been this season. They're on pace to win over 70 games. They're 31-4, number one record in the NBA. They've been just ridiculous to this point. So I don't think they want to bring in a disgruntled, notoriously injury-prone, and difficult-to-employ player in Jimmy Butler. But it could work with LeVert, Max Strus, Okoro, and Georges Niang. They also have one tradable first, one swap, and 8 seconds to play with. I don't know if this would really work at all for Miami either. They probably would ask them for Garland or Allen, which obviously they're not going to do that. But just him in that small forward spot would just totally complete that team, but I just don't think it's happening. The Nuggets, we saw some rumors they were maybe interested in Zach LaVine. I think Jimmy Butler makes a little bit even more sense for them. Would have to be Michael Porter Jr.'s contract plus Zeke Nnaji and Dario Saric. They only have one tradable first-round pick. They can do up to 4 swaps, though, and they don't even have a single second-round pick available to them. I'm sure Miami's probably going to ask for Christian Brown, Julian Strother, Peyton Watson, maybe De'Ron Holmes, who's injured this year. They drafted first round this past season. I wouldn't hate this. They're already not a good shooting team. They're dead last in 3-point rate. They don't shoot it super well from there. And losing Michael Porter Jr. in place of Jimmy Butler is certainly a downgrade shooting wise. But I still think, just given their struggles sometimes offensively, I think it would be a plus for them. I think Butler's a better defender than Porter Jr. Him and Aaron Gordon on the wing is pretty devastating as a forward combination, and just the versatility there. And Butler, again, brings half court offense, brings shot creation, things that the Nuggets have not had a ton of, because Murray has not been super good for them, and they don't really have a lot of that on down the rest of the roster. So something to consider. But again, that would require Miami being cool with taking on the Porter contract, which, I mean, he's still 25-ish, I think. So I wouldn't fault Miami. I think he fits in nice with Hero and Bam, to be honest. They certainly wouldn't be close to contending, but that trio is a nice, at least intriguing, young three guys right there. So we'll see. And then lastly, and this one is probably the scariest for the rest of the league, however, I think not likely at all, but the Oklahoma City Thunder. Because it would require Lu Dort and Isaiah Hartenstein. I think they probably would be cool moving Dort, but I don't think they want to move Hartenstein. He's been great for them. They need the Chet insurance, considering the fact that he has not played in like over 8, 9, 10 weeks, and we still don't know when he's coming back. So if they were to lose him, they'd be forced to play small ball until Chet got back. But then even then, even when Chet is back, we saw last year in the playoffs, they needed another big. So I don't see it. But maybe the Heat could add in a Kevin Love back to them, and then maybe that would make them feel a little bit better. They've got a million picks, obviously, and I'm sure Miami would want Kayson Wallace or Dylan Jones or maybe even like a Usman Dang would suffice. But I don't see this happening, but it's still fun to talk about. I think the Thunder probably would be well served to add somebody at the deadline, even if it's just like a Cam Johnson, just to bolster their likelihood of winning the championship this year, because they have a legitimate shot at it. And I think they should go for it, especially with the gap that they've created in the West. But Butler probably doesn't fit their timeline and what they want to do. So I'd be shocked if it happened, but just still fun to think about, you know. Next, we had some big news out of Phoenix that Bradley Beal and Yusuf Nurkic are going to be benched moving forward. Neither of them will start in the upcoming game. And it's fair to wonder if some of the Beal part of this has anything to do with their trade situation and wanting him to waive the no trade clause. Maybe they want to put him on the bench so that almost give him an ultimatum, like waive the no trade clause or else you're just a sixth man now. But I don't think it's all that. I'm sure that that is maybe on the back of their mind a little bit. But first, they got to find someone that actually wants to take him, obviously. But I think this is more about the on-court performance. And just with how poorly they've played recently, they had to do something. Because I know that they've had injuries, but this thing has not worked thus far. And Bradley Beal's a big part of it because his fit on this team has just always been a bit of a question mark. It's always been a score first guy, lives in the mid range, can knock down from outside, attacks the basket, three level scorer. But a lot of what he does is very redundant with what Booker does and even what Durant does to an extent. But he's not the player that those two guys are. And so it just puts him in a weird spot where he's got to be diminished as a scorer because he's going to be the third option. But he doesn't excel at any of the little things enough to make up for what you're losing in value for him as a diminished scorer. He does not give consistent effort defensively all the time. He can give effort. He doesn't give no effort, but it's not consistent. And they needed to be consistent for him to be the valuable piece they thought they were getting. He doesn't do any of the little things. He's not a hustle guy. He doesn't have great instinct or basketball IQ at times. He can be sloppy. He has turnovers. He plays very emotionally. There are plenty of instances where he will not get a call on one end and then he just doesn't get back on defense. He also just falls asleep on the court sometimes. He's not only does he just kind of disappear. This is the Beal in a nutshell. Their last game against Indiana, there was a play where Monte Morris had the ball on the close to the logo part of the court. And he's dribbling, picks up his dribble, looks like he's going to pass it right to Beal. Beal's tying his shoe, not even looking over at Morris. So then Morris has to look the other way, but there's nobody there. So then somebody has to come up, help him take the ball. At that point, 6-7 seconds had gone on the shot off the shot clock. They end up getting a shot clock violation on that possession. And it's like little things like that where I'm like, why are you tying your shoe mid possession when you're part of the action of that offensive set? Like it just, that is Beal to a T. And so look, he's still a good player. He is still a guy that can give you 20 to 25 on any given night, 30 plus on any given night. With Phoenix, he's actually shot the ball particularly well. I mean, he's got 50, 40, 80 splits in his time with the Suns. So I'm not shitting on Beal as some scrub. He's a good player still. But the things he excels at are the things the Suns already have. They already have 25 point per game scores, guys that do it better than he does. And so him playing next to those guys, it just makes it difficult because when he plays with Booker, they concede something on both ends in some capacity. Like last year, they went with the Booker Beal backcourt, no point guard. And then they were a really turnover prone team because they didn't have a lead guard. Booker was forced to play out of position and it took a little bit away from his scoring and the assassin killer mentality stuff we've seen out of him because he's so just consumed with getting others involved. And then this year, they're playing Tyus Jones with both of them. And the difference here is that now Booker or Beal basically have to play the forward position, which is twofold, because on one hand, you're making Beal basically be the go-to wing defender, and he's only 6'4", doesn't try that hard all the time, and he's going to guard the like LeBron James of the world, the Jaylen Browns of the world, the you name it, just the big wing, small forward scoring types. That now that's Beal's responsibility, and he's got no help for it because Tyus Jones is tiny. Booker and Durant, you can't expect them to do that for 48 minutes. And then also, now Booker used to be able to take advantage of smaller guards that were guarding him all the time. Now he's got 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", forwards guarding him because he's playing the forward position offensively for a lot of the time. And so one thing that Booker does struggle with a lot is physicality. And that's really the way to stop him, is that when there's a team is super physical with him, he doesn't play very well. That's what Minnesota did to him last year, and it worked. McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker and all those guys, Ant even, like, they were just super in his grill, and it affected him, and he didn't play well. And so he's getting more of that this year. That could be a big reason why his numbers are down across the board. But the point is, Beal coming off the bench has made a lot of sense for a while, just because of that redundant skill set. They can let him cook with the second unit. They can let him cook against second units, and he won't have to worry about deferring ever. He can just go do his thing, be his old self. And it makes particular sense when you look at the numbers, because these numbers are not favorable to Beal. His on-off numbers this year, when he plays with Booker on the court this year, they are a minus 12 net rating, versus when Booker's on the court without him, he's a plus 3. And then when Beal's on without him, he's a minus 3. So when they play together, they're awful. When Booker plays without Beal, they're decent. And when Beal plays without Booker, they're still not good, but they're not nearly as bad as when they play together. Same thing for KD. Beal and KD on the court together this year, a minus 11.5 net rating. When KD's on without Beal, he's a plus 7. And then when Beal plays without KD, he's minus 3.5. So exact same thing. When they play together, they're terrible. When KD plays without Beal, they're really, really good. Plus 7 is a great net rating. And then when Beal plays without KD, they're still not very good, but they're much better than when they play together. And then when you put all three of them together, the three of them on the court at the same time have a minus 6.8 net rating this year, which is just completely unacceptable for a supposed big three. And then when KD and Book share without Beal, they're plus 7.4, so they're a really good team when those two are on the court. And then Beal without the other two guys, this is a small sample, not a lot of minutes here, but a plus 20 net rating with just Beal. So Beal clearly is better when the other two are not on the court. The other two are clearly better when he's not on the court. And the other two are clearly better when they're on the court with each other. Like, Booker is better when Durant's out there with him. Durant is better when Booker's out there with him. But they're both worse when Beal's out there. And so these numbers are truly staggering, and I'm sure this is part of the reason why they did this. I'm sure Budenholzer is aware of these numbers and the coaching staff. And so it makes sense, both from an eye test, from a just positional fit. They need to get back to playing a little bit more size on the perimeter. Ryan Dunn's going to start for them. He's been a really nice piece for them this year. His shot has still been inconsistent, but at least he tries defensively. At least he's active on both ends. He cuts off the ball. He seems to be in the right place at the right time a lot of times. If he gets beat, he doesn't give up on the play. He's a great recovery defender, defending from behind. He gets his hands on balls. Like, all the little things that they need to be better as a team defensively, specifically, that Beal's not bringing, Dunn does bring. And just looking at those numbers too, Booker plus KD plus Dunn with no Beal on the court, plus 18.6 net rating. So they've been really good without Beal, with Booker, KD next to Ryan Dunn. So I'm sure all this went into the logic here of why he just needed to move to the bench. He needs to put the ego aside. He said he wanted to come here and sacrifice for this team. And so that's what he's getting. He's got to sacrifice if he's going to continue to be on this roster, because they had to switch something up. And the center thing is like, barely means anything to me, because look, Nurkic has been a disaster this season. He's got more turnovers than assists on the year, shooting only 45% from the field, 30% from three. It's his lowest scoring output since he was a backup back when he was in Denver backing up Jokic, and they're -5 when he's on the court. They're still -1 when he's off the court, but they're clearly worse when he plays. But look, Mason Plumlee, he's not the answer either, but I get what they're doing because Nurkic has just been a mess and the starting lineup has not been good together. And I do think Nurkic is a player who probably is better served playing with the bench unit because he kind of operates with the ball in his hand, is a little bit of a hub. But when he's got so many guys that need the ball and KD, Booker, Beal, and Tyus Jones, it's hard because he's not going to have the ball in his hands and he doesn't know what to do. He's not a good finisher. He doesn't shoot well from deep. Like, he's just kind of out there offensively without a clear role or spot on the court that he excels. And so Mason Plumlee is probably a better skill set for what they need offensively and even in some capacity defensively with their starting unit. But they need to upgrade the center position overall. Whether it be dumping Nurkic, they may not even be able to dump Nurkic. They might just have to add somebody and keep him on the bench, which is still a fine option. But I think these moves, while they might ruffle some feathers, but maybe for the better in some way, because Nurkic is not a guy they probably want on the team long term. Beal, a guy I'm sure they wouldn't mind waiving that no trade clause. So maybe this is the precursor to deals for both of these players. But either way, I think it's a move that's going to benefit them. They need to turn this thing around desperately because they are out of the play-in right now. They are the 12 seed in the Western Conference and things are not looking good for them. I mean, since they started 8-1, they've gone 7-17. They're 15-18 overall. They're 20th in the NBA net rating at -2.3. They are 28th in half court defensive rating behind only the Jazz and Bulls. So yes, that means they're worse than the Wizards, the Nets, the Pelicans, the Blazers, the Hornets. They have just completely gotten away from the three-point shooting that they did so well earlier in the year. They're still 9th in percentage of shots taken from three on the year. But since mid-December, they're 28th there. They are 2nd in percentage of shots taken from mid-range. So they are reverting to their bad habits as a mid-range shooting team. They apply zero rim pressure whatsoever. They're 30th, dead last in the league in shots taken at the rim. They cannot survive when KD doesn't play because they have too many undersized guys. Beal, Royce, O'Neal, Tyus, Monte Morris, Grayson, all 6'4" or under. They are forced to play Royce O'Neal at the center sometimes in small ball lineups when KD doesn't play, and at the power forward at the very least, even next to centers. Booker's having probably his worst season since he entered his prime. He's just not shooting the ball well this year. And they got no heart, no fight, no leadership. There's nobody out there on the court that gets pissed off when the other team goes on a run, that's holding the guys accountable when they're just lacking effort on either end of the court. And so things are ugly right now. I'm still not in the blow it up, trade KD spot yet, because then you open a dangerous can of worms with Devin Booker, and then maybe he wants out. And then once you trade Booker and Durant, you are going to be a bottom feeder, but they do not have a single one of their own picks until 2031. So it's just too risky to do that, to get rid of, like, they would be literally a bottom five team in the league, and not just this year, probably next year and the year after. And they'd have no means to get better because they don't have any of their picks. So without the incentive to draft players, I'm not a believer in tanking. I still think that riding this out and being a 10 seed is better than a bottom feeder given the pick situation. It's depressing to think about, but the only way I'm trading KD personally is if you sit down, talk to Devin Booker, and he's on board with it and says, hey, I'm cool with this. Let's retool around me, get a little younger, get a little deeper, see where we're at in a year or two. If he's on board with that, then sure, trade Kevin Durant. It could make the most sense, at least in the offseason. But if Booker gives any resistance to that, then I just don't see a scenario where it makes any sense to blow it up, because what's the next move? What's the next step? It's just, there's nowhere to go. You'll be stuck in the bottom of the league with no future, no way to improve for what's probably 6-7 years down the road before you can even get a top five, top 10 pick. And so it's not a place you want to be. And so as depressing as it is for Phoenix and for their fans, you got to just ride this out. Maybe you trade for Jimmy Butler and that helps a little bit. Maybe you upgrade the center spot. You can work your way back into the play-in playoff picture. Probably not going to be a top four seed at this point, but hey, if you can get the 6-7 seed, you're not dead. It's not that long ago, a year ago, when they were in a pretty similar spot, and then they ended up finishing the year really strong as this and got to the 6th seed. But probably not going to expect much out of Phoenix this year. To me, they're pretty cooked in terms of just all the issues they have, and it's going to take a lot of change, not only just personnel-wise, but also just the way this team plays before I'll get bought into them as anything more than a team that's probably going to lose first round. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Thank you so much for listening. Was going to talk a little bit more about some of the top teams across the league, but the news came out last night with Phoenix. Felt like I had to address that. So I'll have another pod up probably over the next week or so. Talk a little bit more about some more of the actual games being played rather than some of this stuff in the news. But we've got the trade deadline coming up. I'm sure Jimmy might get moved relatively soon. We will see. But I'd be shocked if he wasn't moved before the deadline at the very least, which is month and a half away at this point. And then we've got the All-Star game coming up soon-ish. So might do talk about who I think should be All-Stars, talk about the ridiculous teams at the top, the Thunder, the Cavs, the Celtics stumbling a little bit, the Wolves that are struggling a ton, the Lakers and Clippers looking good all of a sudden. So there's a lot to talk about in the league, and I will get to it all over the next week or so. But thank you so much for listening, and I will chat with you soon. We'll be right back.